music.
It's rich, it's alive, it's vivid. Stereophonic sound.
Are you fed up with constantly searching for the records you want?
Fame, fortune, platinum records. It's every boy's dream.
Every one of my records means something. The label, the producer, the year it was made.
I'm teaching you about rock music.
Seriously, you're totally elitist. You feel like the unappreciated scholars.
Okay, let's spin a disc.
Hey, gang. You ever have one of those moments when you roll over in bed and you look at your alarm clock, and it reads 5:59 in the a.m., Sonny and Cher start singing at exactly the sixth spot, I Got You, Babe. You look outside and it's snowing all over Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, and you say to yourself, out there is a groundhog with a perverse sense of time control, a godlike rodent coming in through the ether, reading my brains, correcting my moments, giving me that second chance to become that much better. Nah, I don't think so either. But I screwed up in hitting record.
Now we have a snowball fight.
Build a snowman. Yeah, come the kids. I am your host, Eric, and this reenactment of Groundhog Day featuring Bill Murray starred both me
and me,
my co-host,
Chris with a K, call me Buck today.
Holy shit.
Nice.
And that profanity-laced voice was Buck, was Chris, who we're going to call Eslin today.
Right. You can beep that out. That's
no, I
fine.
Can't.
No, not
I'm going to replace it with Kanye going poop scoopity doop
doop. Oh, that's even better.
Yeah. And I'm only going to replace every swear in the show with poop scoopity doop dee or whatever he says.
I was not ready for Buck to be dropping rhymes tonight.
No, I wasn't either. He definitely has brought it. Well, you're listening to episode 36, Rockin' Sold, and this week we're going to be talking about selling out. But before we get there, we have three more episodes until the season finale, which, if I do my math right, puts us at the end of June, just in time for Buck and myself to go on summer hiatus. Not together.
But separate.
Yeah, I tried to go on your vacation, but you disinvited me, which was kind of mean. You know, what do you do?
Well, you know, I can only take so many puns.
I can only take so many people.
And people.
I know, and I said leave the kids behind. They'll be fine, but no.
The tall one will watch the short one.
The tall one.
I just said put them in the basement, and that way they won't fall down the stairs. There's some food down there. It's chilly.
Win-win.
Yeah, exactly. So over the summer, I'm going to do two more episodes of the Ignore Alien Orders show. So if you have a favorite psychedelic song, a Britpop song, or an indie rock song that you want to hear, by all means, make the recommendation. I played one recommendation last time. Somebody had sent me a second one, but I couldn't find a copy of it.
Eat more chicken.
You just want to prove that you listen to it. So the other two shows are going to be shows from Chris. He has some kind of secret plan, which he totally will not let us in on. He did say that it involves lots of dice, an Arkham's razor.
Oh, Arkham's razor or Occam's razor?
That guy.
Okay.
Arkham's razor. Yeah. That's a Gillette razor.
Yeah. Made in Gotham City.
Yeah. Speaking of razors, how are you, Eslin?
I'm fine.
Oh, good. That's all I got for you. Okay. That's your intro.
I did shave my head today.
Yeah.
So the razor's getting duller.
Well, that's okay, because I think between us...
If we add our hair together, we don't equal Buck.
I know. And what's crazy about Buck is that he can shave his head and 2 days later have that same length back.
If I could donate it, I would.
But enough of this shenanigans.
We had another butt first.
We do. What is our butt first?
We want to thank Radio Mutation.
Oh, my God. Yes, we do.
And all its fandom that we have been blessed to inherit.
Yes. Thank you all for tuning in to Radio Mutation's only talk show. At which point, if you're a new listener to this show, you might be thinking to yourself, when are they going to get to the issues that I care about? And chill out. We're going to get there. Just relax, all right? God. First, I want to tell you, you should be listening to the Mouth, not right this second, but eventually
after this.
You should go to Radio Mutation and listen to the Mouth Thursday show with Mouth Thursday, Steve Terrell's The Big Enchilada, There's a person named Angela who has a show called Radio. Oh my God, sorry, I forgot the name of her show. I forgot Angela's last name and the name of her show.
Just edit that part out.
Yeah, I will. Scoopity doopity. The topic of today's show is selling out, a common idiomatic pejorative comprising of personal integrity, morals, authenticity, or principles in exchange for personal gain, or when a band or artist tailors material to the mainstream. That is what Wikipedia tells us selling out is. Chris, in your mind, in that twisted cavern that you call a brain sack, what is your idea of selling out?
Well, I say, for the sake of an argument here, that we may or may not have already have once.
Yes.
Cue
yes. the song. I got you, babe.
Yeah.
I
was saying, or I am saying, that as far as if a song, if you had ideals.
Okay.
If
I had ideals. Are you suggesting
you
I don't?
Eric, you wouldn't understand.
If you had something called integrity. Okay,
here's
go ahead.
Thing about principles. You take your time, you craft them, you put them in, if you're a musician or even any other kind of artist,
sure.
Right? If I made a piece of art and it was speaking out against some kind of injustice or whatever, and then I sold it to something that couldn't possibly that was counter to that ideal.
Okay.
Right? So if I wrote a punk rock song, and it was railing against the evils of pure sugar soda,
sure,
and then Pepsi came along and said, "Well, I will see your song about the evils of sugar filled soda. Here's a couple bucks, and we're gonna use your catchy tune as our flagship song now."
I don't think that's selling out.
No?
Because Pepsi doesn't use real sugar, so they're totally free. You actually found the loophole in
the
that.
The loophole, it's
yeah,
not
exactly.
Real sugar.
So if it was about aspartame, then we'd have a whole nother story.
Oh boy.
So to summarize, you think selling out is to simply go against your message.
I should have started out with, I'm a capitalist above all else, so like, we live in America, capitalism is a thing. If, I do believe that if you have a chance to make some money, I have the Henry Rollins approach, do it.
Yeah.
But my version of selling out would be that. Like, that's what I would call it.
So if Rollins was to shift from his black t-shirts to a white t-shirt or a pink t-shirt, you'd be like, sell out. you went against your morals.
All right. I mean, that was my interpretation. I think I don't want to steal your thunder, Mr. Sawyer, but
I don't have any thunder to steal.
Well,
don't worry.
At a moment in time, you have a certain set of principles, and if the idea of selling out to me always was going against those principles, right?
Right.
So
well, I think
that was my interpretation of what.
And this is where we realized that people grow up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they change. So I think a lot of what's difficult about punk, and I think we're kind of specifically talking about punk or indie or some music here.
Yeah, I'll throw in a little bit of hip hop later.
Non-commercial
music.
Right. Yeah.
The idea is a lot of that stuff is created originally as someone who's younger and they're very idealistic. And then as they grow older, they kind of realize that some of those idealistic ideas aren't necessarily as true to them as they were back
sure.
then. So I don't find that changing your opinion means selling out. I think selling out is more specifically changing yourself in order to sell records or to make more money, not necessarily
yeah, sure.
changing ideas.
Sure. I can't argue with that either. Yeah.
I think like when I look at, when I think about selling out and I think about what it means to maybe accept corporate sponsorship or allow your song to be, because I think the biggest problem is when people see an artist that they love or respect in an advertisement. So I'm, obviously I go to Henry Rollins Gap ads from the 90s, 96, I think it was.
When I don't remember, yeah, but I'm
he
sure.
and Iggy Pop appeared in a series of Gap ads.
Oh,
and
yeah,
people
yeah,
went
yeah.
through the roof and people still haven't forgiven.
And I would think actually at this point right now, we're all showing our age. I don't think anyone cares about selling out anymore.
No.
It's all
yeah.
about selling whatever it is. The idea of getting your music out there or whatever it is the most important thing. You know, Moby in the 90s when his record tanked and he just decided to sell it to car places and any commercials or anything that they could get it to was the beginning of the end of people worrying about selling out.
I agree. Well, that's thank you very much for joining us, folks. We'll see you next week. No, I think that you're exactly right. I think that in this day and age, and I hold that accountable, or I hold that as a thing for one, the way music is licensed, that bands don't have that kind of control necessarily. You sign to a major label, and their representation goes. Yeah. Well, here I think about when. John Darnielle was played at the Gap. No. One of those California PacSun stores.
Yeah.
They were playing Mountain Goats. And
okay.
He was like, I don't have a say in that. Like, my management handles this. I just get the check. And quite frankly, request more of me in stores.
Yes, right.
Right.
Well, I think... Because I think, you know, we... are realizing as consumers that bands make squat off of the albums that they put out. And especially with things like Spotify or the other sort of free downloadable Pandora things.
Yep.
These bands never see a dime of that. Well, they do eventually after the 100 plays equal a dime.
Right.
They then get a check divided four or five ways.
Yeah, some of that's supposed to be covered by that ASCAP stuff, isn't it?
But it pays...
I know it pays squat.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not fair.
A lot of even big musicians talk about, like, they'll get a check for $5 and be like, oh, great.
I actually saw something interesting. I don't remember the band or the record label. Something on Instagram. It was actually saying... I think the industry is trying to... The private part of this music of the music industry, the indie part, is trying to rally together and... promote these things, like in turn promote Spotify and get people in there, because I think they are figuring out that if they can prove that there's a commodity there or something, that
people basically just want access to whatever they want whenever they want it. If they want music and they can go into Spotify and they can get literally anything. We have an exchange student living with us, and the only thing basically that she brought with her was a Spotify premium account, and she can listen to whatever she wants for as long as she wants. There's no limit. There's not going to the store and going, I have $10 this month to spend on a record.
Yeah.
Which one do I listen to? It's, I have $10 this month. I can listen to any record that's on Spotify.
Sure. And I think that for the ease, it's definitely there. I think for feeding the machine that's providing the music, then I am all for bands using their songs in advertisements or in TV shows, because at least it ensures a broader audience. It ensures something of a paycheck. And really where bands make their money is on tour. You have to be a touring band. You have to get out there and play. You have to sell T-shirts. You got to put your face on cozies or, I looked at the big danger of this, though, is the Misfits and the Ramones, where bands become brands. You know, and I was thinking as I was looking up stuff, I was like, okay, so what products can I buy as a Misfits fan? Because we did a whole, first season of Misfits, and people are still like,
well, get out.
But people are still like, well, I don't really know the Misfits, right? I mean, so even though they're ubiquitous, they're T-shirts are on television, and there's, everyone knows the Crimson Skull.
Right. I would argue that they know that, but they don't know what it is.
Right. And so I started looking, and I was like, okay, so there's Misfits action figures. There's Misfits T-shirts on celebrities. There's pop vinyl figures. There are...
not of Danzig.
Woven blankets, fidget spinners, three different types of Crimson Skull masks, rubber bracelets, and sex toys.
Oh,
yes, yeah. That's what I was going to be honest with you, because you guys know the band Ghost.
Yeah,
they're a merch machine. They're like the Misfits. If the Misfits were now, if the Misfits were a band now that we're currently playing and making new music as opposed to being a variety show, they're selling everything. They've got hats, they've got knickers, they've got swimming trunks, they've got pint glasses, they've got phallus dildo bags or dildos.
Scoop
that are in the face of Papa Emeritus there.
Wow.
There's patches, ornaments for your Christmas tree. Like it, anything that they can put their brand on is what they're doing.
And that's – so is that selling out? Is that – do you agree with that? I mean, do you think that that's an appropriate – or is it overkill?
I think all that stuff is just kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Even for the Misfits and the Ramones, I think it's – I don't have a problem with it particularly. Personally, I think it's dumb. I say sell whatever you can. If that's – your band is your life, and you've got to make money off of it.
Yeah, I think I think we even brought this up before where we, or two out of the three of us anyway, were at Face-to-Face show. And he actually was – you weren't there. Yeah, Chris
– I was like, wait, was I
Sawyer there? Wasn't there. Or you were there because I think one time I said I was at the show and you were like, yeah, I was there too.
Yeah, yeah.
Jerk. But anyway, he's up there, and he voiced something that, you know, I've always known to be true, but I don't know how much thought I really put into it, and that was, hey, like, I just turned 50 or whatever, and I'm up still up here. Thanks. We really appreciate you guys being up here, being out tonight, and it was like a Tuesday night, right, or whatever, and he's like, because this is my retirement plan, right? Like, I've got to keep playing, and it was, I sat there for a moment, like, never really thought much about it, but here's a band I've been listening to for over 20 years, and... And, yeah, like he's got to keep, this is it.
It's right? weird because there are some guys that don't, you know, Walter Schriefel's from Quicksand Gorilla Biscuits. He's in 78 bands. He's always playing, but I don't even know if he has to, like, he must be like a designer or something. I don't know.
Well, I think, yeah, you know, the money again, it's like kind of anything along those lines where the money doesn't come from being in the band. The money comes from owning the label that the band was on. Like, like I look at Ian. Ian's not, I don't think, rolling in. I mean, I don't know exactly. I know he's worth like $2 million, $3 million. But I think that's Discord is worth this. And, you know, yes, it's Minor Threat and Fugazi that keeps Discord going. But ultimately, he's managed to eke out an entire living, never putting his face on anything, never selling an official T-shirt, $10 tickets at the door. But yet, when the label started to expand, they put barcodes on their products, and people lost their minds.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was big because before that, Discord was the independent label above all. Everyone else looked at Discord and said they were successful. They put out good music. They had a mission, which was just to document the DC scene. And everyone was like, this is amazing. We're going to do the same thing in our neck of the woods. Yep. And then Discord was like, well, you know, we'd like to get our records out easier. We'd like to have people be able to, you know, inventory them easier.
Yeah, well, I think there's a point where there's a, like, whether it's, there are mechanisms, like the commercial industry creates mechanisms, right? Yeah. So you get to a point where you're actually spending money or not making as much money by sacrificing this fact that there's a more convenient mechanism to do something like get your records into a store and on a shelf, right, than to like drive it all there yourself. Like maybe it's like buying into some warehouse space or having a courier service or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are things that evolve, like, right, like we've commercially, but the industry evolves.
Integrity is great, but is it better than starving? Right, like, is it better than going hungry?
So just, I was trying to Google the thing on barcodes, but what came up was Ian McKay approves Urban Outfitters Minor Threat apparel.
You know, and
$28 Minor Threat t-shirts, and Ian McKay approves it. Discord Records legitimized it, so.
Yeah, well, how recent was that, do you know?
The article is from Rolling Stone in 2013.
You know, and even though we're sitting here saying basically we're okay with this, there's a lot of people, and I think it's a possessiveness over the scene. You know, when I was growing up, to be punk rock was an outsider's game. You know, you people made fun of your shirts or the names of the bands or the way you wore your hair or, you know, the army surplus clothing or whatever it was.
That one hit me right in the feels.
But I'm saying, yeah, I mean, but kids, we grew up in a very different age where that stuff was outsider art. And I think that there are people who feel very protective because they went through stuff. And I look at modern fanboys. And I'm not defending the anger or the reactions of these guys, or the actions of these guys. I'm defending the reaction, which is I can understand their hurt, because suddenly you went from kind of going, yeah, I watched Star Wars, yeah, I played D&D, to the whole world being like, I got a podcast on D&D, and there's like 19 different Dungeons & Dragons podcasts. Or you go to comic book conventions, and it's all like, you know,
there's nothing
women
special.
Who are trying to make their modeling careers on cosplaying,
yeah,
you know. And so all of these strangers are now in your scene.
Well, do you have what are you I lost track of what you were
talking about.
Not what you're talking about, but what was the problem? Like, where was the problem?
Well, I was going to say so I think that when we as a scene, right, watch somebody become mainstream or break in an advertisement or appear on a TV show, or someone on a TV show is wearing the t-shirt of a band you love, or it's hanging on a poster in a wall in a scene of a TV show or a movie, I think there's that sense of that's leaving me now. Oh shit, here comes the neighborhood kind of thing.
Yeah, okay.
I understand the music-wise. I don't get Star Wars. Star Wars has been popular since day one. Every kid in the 80s played with Star Wars. And if not every kid, then 88% of them
sure,
played with Star Wars.
Sure, but after Return of the Jedi, and I don't want... This isn't a Star Wars podcast, and
it is
there's
now.
Too many of them, frankly, so I don't give a shit. But I think that, you know, there was a... Don't forget, there was a massive 20-year gap.
Right.
Where Star Wars was persona non grata, right? It had passed its prime. Most people were all now parents.
I guess I'm thinking of it as being a kid as opposed to being someone who was born at a time when Star Wars wasn't new and yeah. everything.
I mean, look at comic books. What the difference between reading comic books when you were 16, 17 and now, you know, being in your 40s and reading a comic book. There's a legitimization now because it's in the mainstream, right?
Yeah, but and then somewhere along the lines, though, so I was in that dark ages where literally comics basically sucked. Like the writers were awful. The art was subpar, right? And somewhere in there, it got...
So from 1981 to 1998.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Unfair. Like,
do you know what I mean, though? There was a classic age of stuff where everything was new and being born or golden and then classic. You know, whatever. However they do that, however they've earmarked that stuff. But so there was like things were new and they were like, you know, some of it was still weak, but, you know, weak story-wise. But anyway, it was, this is new stuff. And it had a cultish thing, feel right. to it, right? And yeah, older generation were like, what is this? You know, read a real book, you know, kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Use your imagination. You don't need pictures, you know. But and then it, they, like when I was a kid, I didn't really like a lot of the comics. They would be given to me, and it was because it was crap. It was like G.I. Joe.
But I'm not. But I'm saying like what I'm saying is there were people who loved it though, and who suffered through that dark ages.
Sure, sure.
Who firmly believed in the story arcs, and they stayed with it, and they followed everything, and they collected everything.
But to them, it wasn't the Dark Ages,
right?
It was there. That was there.
And, well, I think this and is. What they, but I actually blame fans on this, though.
Here's where I don't totally blame fans. I think that.
Here's where I partially blame fans.
way to straddle the fence, dude.
Yeah, look, Goldilocks. So, no, I think that. I can understand. This is where I said the difference between action and reaction.
Sure.
The reaction is, who are all these people coming into my scene? It's like you're at a you're in a park and you found a nice little patch of land. It's in the shade and you're enjoying your picnic. And suddenly everybody looks over and sees you there and goes, "What a great idea!" And you went from playing with your family in a nice little wooded area to 60, 70 people piled in on top of you.
That would be frustrating. But here's the deal. Let's say it costs $5 to get into that spot. Okay.
Yeah.
And paying that $5 helps support the area that you're in and helps even make new areas like that for other people to enjoy.
Right? Sure.
So then more people going in there has now created a better maintained space and the ability for them to continue this space for everyone to enjoy.
I hear that, and I totally, totally get it. And I am, you know, I'm all for the concept of selling out. Like, I'm all for the concept of put your music anywhere you want it. But I also remember being a kid, and I think I mentioned this on the show before, but, like, making a mixtape for a girl that I had a crush on. Mm-hmm. And my friend, who was super into, like, it was, like, All and Descendants, came running over and was like, what the hell did you do? You know, this is a scene. You've got to kind of earn your place in the scene. And, you know, and I was like, what the hell are you talking about? I just made a tape for somebody. Like, I'm not turning her into a scenester. Like, you know, my track record for giving girls mixtapes is like 0 and 20. So until that moment happens, we'll be one more person in the scene. But I think that what I'm saying is I can understand where they're coming from. Do I support it or does it excuse the actions? Hell no. But when you were in, like, think about when you started to go to shows and you would see shows and there would be like 10 people in the audience, 20 people in the audience, and you were like, yeah, this is awesome. Suddenly, you can't get tickets. Suddenly, you know, the person comes to town and tickets are $60, $70, right? I think of some bands, like I first saw Green Day for $5.
Yep.
Now Green Day tickets are almost $200, $150 at the Civic Center, right? And yeah. I saw them literally standing next to them as they performed with like 50
other
people.
Yeah, you got Billy Joe's sweat on you and you never walked after that.
You know, looking around, but I can understand looking around and seeing all these people. Like, when I came home from college, my dad was like, I want to show you something, right? And I, you know, I didn't have a hard time, but I didn't have an easy time in high school, right? I felt like very much like an outsider. Punk rock was that security blanket and all of that kind of stuff. When I came home my freshman year of college, my dad was in hysterics. He's like, you're going to love this. I'm like, what is it? He pops in a VHS tape, and it was an MTV thing on Green Day. And, you know, it was like, Green Day started out as this small punk band. Yeah. Now they're a national thing. And this one girl was like, oh, my God, Time of Our Life is like our total prom theme. And my dad was like, fuck you. You know, he thought it was like the funniest thing on the planet. Now, that's not their fault. They can't control that the fact that they're drawing in more fans. It was that one mixtape that I made.
Also, damn it.
I also love the idea of this. One of the pinnacles in, like, just as far as proximity to me, like, this beacon of a man who was an ideal Christian man to me, right?
Yep.
Like, and the idea of him just being like, in your face, son.
Yeah. he was not ideal.
Mean though, right? But like, he is a beacon of his community, right? And I love that.
Oh my God.
I think that part of
he's
that feeling,
human. I like you just
mock my dad.
As when you're younger and you're getting into something.
No,
for the
I was
first
celebrating
time,
him. No, oh, like, yeah. Okay.
It's a small thing. You think it's a small thing and it starts to expand and you're terrified of it. As you get older, you realize, hey, that was really good for me. I think maybe other people might enjoy this too, might find something in it. So like, it's definitely perspective. Like, if I saw a guy in his 60s who was pissed off at some band that sold out, I'd be embarrassed for him.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. I guess this is where I never had that level of protectiveness, you know?
Yeah.
Like I've always had maybe because I never quite felt part of the scene. Like I think that was mainly because of how I was not allowed to, like, you know, I couldn't just go to a show. It was not something that my, like, household wise that it was easy for me to do.
Sure.
So it was like, if I had any chance to be, to like drop knowledge on somebody, like I took it.
Right? Yeah.
And so it was like, like, you don't know this. Like, oh, here, like, I don't know if you like this, but like, here's my whole discography by this band. Like, just borrow it, listen to it, and...
But that's different. That's an organic punk rock growth.
But all
one
I
person
meant...
to another. It's not the all of a sudden on MTV that the prom song is Time of Your Life.
Or right.
Time. Yeah, yeah, I guess so. But I guess it fits into my view as, like, I never felt that protectiveness on it. Like, to me, if... You know, I guess I'd be saddened if all of a sudden tickets were $60 and I can't go see them, but... I would.
I will admit to being.
I'm going off the path a little, but.
Well, I'll admit, like, from my own point of view, being a little hurt in terms of when I was a kid, I was really into this band called Small Factory, and they dropped. You know, I was there at their very first show. I was there when they opened up for Robin Hitchcock. I was there when they opened up for My Bloody Valentine. You know, they played my high school graduation. And then I went away for 4 years. And when I came back, they were breaking up. And yet they had been on MTV. They had become, they had signed to this larger label called Vernon Yard. They were the sort of cream of the indie rock scene for, you know, Twee and stuff like that. And I went to the final show and bought a t-shirt. And like, I was like, oh, you know, because all the other t-shirts I had of them were handmade by the band. Right. This was the first where they pulled out the Hanes box and were like, oh, you want a medium? Before it was like, Eric, what do you want? You know, a large. All right, I'll make one for you and send it off on Monday.
Yeah.
You know, it was like that kind of thing. And I bought the t-shirt and I was like, oh, you know, I don't even know what to do with the stupid thing now that I've bought it. So I put it on. This kid was like, poser. Like, you just come into your first small factory. And I immediately.
Yeah, but F that dude.
Became so enraged. So I, you know, like, but
that doesn't change the feeling he was feeling. Like, no, seriously, F that dude, because who cares? But at the same time, when you're feeling that way, you're kind of stuck in there and you're like, God, this is my thing.
Yeah. No, F all of you, right. Because none of you have been here for the last, you know, 6 years, 7 years of the band. And I know it's not really selling out per se, but anytime that scene lurches and grows, something is lost.
So I would say, okay, what is, do we have a definitive example of someone selling out?
Can I drop a definition on you here? Or
only if you drop another rhyme.
Yeah.
Go. Oh. So it's more of a history, a historical statement. Sellout, as applied to musicians, was a slur that had a birth. It rose to prominence in the late 1950s and early 60s when two communities in which the term was common came together at the intersection of politics and music. So it was like someone compromising their music with politics.
And I think I hear that, but like I think that like selling out in terms of finding examples becomes really complicated.
Exactly.
Because you look at like and I think this is a nice digression for the second half of the show, and so we can get some music in here, but I look at like Iggy Pop selling songs like Lust for Life for Carnival Cruises. Lust for Life is a song about heroin addicts, right? Yep. It's a song about like, you know, shooting up drugs and stuff like that.
I'm sure at that point Iggy Pop needed that. I mean, he was not well for a
long time. No, and he still isn't. He still is, you know, or Henry Rollins, like I said earlier, with the Gap ads, you know, when your Black Flag days are, you know, fight the police, fight authority, you know, screw this, screw that. And then you're like, I buy Gap, you know, I buy $36 black t-shirts. Well,
so who sold out more, Henry Rollins or Ice Cube?
Oh, I would say that's a really good. See, here's the thing. In my heart, to argue, I'll say Cube. In my heart of hearts, I don't believe either of them sold out. I believe that, you know,
they Black Flag paychecks path.
And NWA paychecks only go so far. If you're going to make bank doing Are We There Yet 1 and 2, by all means do Are We There Yet 1 and 2. Right.
You're following your path. Something opens up for you because of what you've done, so you take it.
That's the Henry Rollins mantra.
But right? I can like, see how people would be upset.
Say yes.
You know, but again, Cube, like you bring up a really good point with Cube, right? Cube starts out in NWA being distinctly no marijuana, right? I don't smoke weed or cess because it's known to give a brother brain damage when upon the mic, right? So he comes out with that, and then it's all about weed and smoking weed.
Right, when right? Chronic becomes popular, that whole time frame.
Right, exactly. Then he drops all that to go to, like, to play the bumbling father in Are We There Yet 1 and 2. And I think that people forget that Ice Cube is not his real name.
Right? It is.
Right? It's not his birth name. This is a character, right? Right? His life has become this sort of character. Like John Lydon is, it may have started out something, but now it's this kind of persona.
It's a brand.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm looking for. And I think that once you become that, then, you know, if a couple Gap ads got Henry Rollins the money to put out his publishing company, which in turn, you know, financed all this other stuff, that's not selling out. That's tactical advancement.
Well, and like the Sex Pistols from the beginning were made like on a big label.
They were a boy band right out of the start.
Yeah,
right.
They were put together because they had an idea.
That's always the weird part about Sex Pistols being like this punk ideal.
Like, sure. Oh, I totally agree.
That always confused the shit out of me.
So Malcolm McLaren had managed the New York Dolls. They collapsed under his guidance. He had a store with Vivian Westwood called Sex. They wanted to sell clothing, bondage gear, and stuff like this. And they were like, how do we do this? Well, let's get some people to wear our clothing. Well, bondage gear isn't really the kind of stuff you wear outside. So you start to incorporate
it. Says you.
Yeah. Right. So you start to build a scene. You know, you start to give a platform for this stuff to be worn. And so he created a boy band of his ideals for his clothing. He and Vivian's clothing. Now, Lydon himself, you know, they laughed at all the money they made. You know, there's that great Bill Grundy interview, which we played a while ago, where, you know, Bill says, what did you do with all your money? And he's like, well, we spent it. He's like, aren't you supposed to be anti-money, anti-capitalistic? And they're like, no. Like, I don't believe we said that. We've been spending money like crazy.
You imposed that ideal on me.
Yeah, like, and, I didn't. You know, if you write me a check for $1 million and I go out and spend it, I guess I am being anti-materialistic.
Well, yeah, and then here's the like the, I'm going out there, I'm being as crass as possible. I'm actually insulting you to your face. I'll talk crap about my label, about all the guy producing my stuff.
Yep.
And they're still writing me checks. So like, people are eating it up. You know?
And the more I talk, the more the checks come.
Yeah.
The more people like it.
And so I you know, it's funny because I followed that little thread, right? So John Lydon a few years ago is famous for appearing on a butter ad. Now notice he has gone from Rotten to Lydon. So he's changed his brand.
Sure.
Right? Which allows him the freedom to do all this kind of stuff and separates him from Rotten. But I look at, you know, so he did this this butter ad and people were like, oh, sell out. Like, what? Like, first of all, if you're John Lydon, you're sitting around, someone's like, we're going to give you a ton of money to put your face on a cow, right? And do the never mind the bollocks, like, here's more butter, eat more butter. You know, I think you're going to be like, yeah.
Eat more butter.
Yeah, you're going to be like, why not? This is a genius concept. But then I look at the Virgin credit cards, you know, these 18.9 APR credit cards that came out with all the Sex Pistols imagery.
Built from the Fury or something on it.
Yeah, it was you know, the God Save the Queen flag with the, you know, the imagery on there. One was Never Mind the Bollocks, and there were like one or two other cards that you could get. Did I want one? Yeah. Did I want to open up a Virgin credit card account? No.
So you're calling that selling out?
That reeks to me more of selling out, even though Virgin was the company that eventually put out the Sex Pistols, like, so Virgin EMI put them out. So they kind of, I think
the difference between all that other stuff is if Ice Cube goes out and does Are We There Yet? One, he's doing it for a couple of reasons. He's moved on in his life. He's in a different place. Maybe he's got kids. Maybe he wants to make some stuff that his kids can see and be like, remember, that was just a character and this is just a character and I'm your dad. With the Sex Pistols credit card, it was, you got money? You got our money?
Yeah.
Because there's really no other reason to have your name on a credit card other than 18.9%.
Right. Yeah, and regardless of what the Sex Pistols stood for, the concept of a punk ethos is not 18.9% APR credit cards.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I guess I have a hard time, too. Like, there's a weird moral... I want to call it a moral line.
Yeah.
But it's not morals. It's just, I don't know what it is.
Morals isn't taking advantage of someone.
Well, I guess, so that, like, yeah, like, cause like, so credit card companies are lecherous, right? Like I, you know, have myself knowing the struggles of trying to get out from underneath, you know, poor spending habits,
right?
You know.
The credit card companies take advantage of that.
Oh yeah. So they're creeps.
And as someone who, you know, supposedly... I don't know if the Sex Pistols really were morals.
There goes that Chase sponsorship.
Yeah, exactly. We're this close, Chris. This close.
You know, Screw Chase anyway.
Well, I look at like, you know, so then the next step was Malcolm McLaren's son, after McLaren died, took $5 million of punk rock 77 merchandise and burned it all. He and Vivian Westwood had a massive bonfire. And his comment was, punk has become nothing more than a McDonald's brand owned by the state establishment and corporations. And I'll actually even one-up him and say that punk is dead. Like, punk doesn't mean anything anymore. It's a fashion.
Yeah, it's a brand. It's a statement as to, like, which part of the society pie do you fit in? Well, I'm kind of in the punk
society. Because I would even say, like, cell phones to me are not punk. Like, Instagram to me is not punk rock. I don't care how you use it. I don't care what your ultimate end game is. Social media is not punk rock.
Why?
It goes against, to me, first of all, you're giving yourself over to a corporation. By going on Instagram, Facebook, any of these things, you're signing that terms and agreement which says we own your content. And the idea of being, if punk rock is about being, or hip hop even, is about being awake. It's about being clued into the world around you, right? If that's the case, having your head buried in a phone is not living that ideal, right? And especially,
what if they're Google goggles and it's VR?
Well, then of course, yeah, no problem. Okay. Yeah, thank you, Google, the lovely folk at
Google. Google goggles.
Google used to not be evil.
So I feel like that to me is like, you know, when I go to shows and I see kids like selfieing in the pit, you know, or like you know, it's, you can always tell when you're, it's like being. You can always tell when your friends go to a show because you'll get 900 Instagram videos of blown out speakers like.
I just posted one up.
And you're like, what am I watching here? I'm watching noise.
See, that stuff doesn't bother me. I just wish people could edit themselves. Just, I don't need to see every single picture you took. Take 5 good pictures, put it on there as one post, and then leave it be.
But see, there's nothing.
Okay with me.
There's nothing in my mind.
I'm feeling attacked right now.
There's nothing in my mind.
Have you seen my Instagram feed?
There's nothing in my mind. And I know, I'm very well aware that both of you do it, because I do it as well, okay? I'm not pretending I'm holier than thou. I'm simply saying, like, that to me is not punk, right? You know, I'm no one to say what's punk and what's not.
It's one of those things to like, so like I was kind of alluding to before, like I'm at the point now where I don't think punk was even ever really a thing. Like it's based on a false premise.
I don't know. When I was 20, 21, I was definitely like, was the life.
Maybe on the outside of it possibly, but I think looking back that meant to me, but I think the difference here, Chris, and I think you're striking on something though, is when we were kids, that stuff meant something to us because we made the scene. We were out there supporting the labels. We were out there going to the shows. We were out there putting out our own stuff, our own zines, our own T-shirts.
Yeah, but and then from a certain angle, I mean, you gotta like the what happens, and it happens at a faster rate now. But like, and it's the realities of the world are that, at least the reality of a capitalist America, is that you. Any chance, so there are the 1% there, the four corporations that control this country, right? Whoever they are,
Disney.
One of them's
Johnson, General Mills, yeah, or one of those. Yeah, cut by cut.
So like, you know, they've all got the spider web of who owns what and all that, and in the end, it all boiling down to like, you know, four people is.
Corporations are not people.
Actually, law says different now. Yeah. Yeah. So, let's not go there. that you can listen to that in my
in my other podcast. Yeah. Corporations are people.
Corporations are.
This week we have on the Coca-Cola Corporation. So, Coke, what do you have to say?
Pop.
Oh, guess you can't say crap because you ain't a people.
Drink more Coke. No. You know, over the years, I actually meant to look this up and didn't have time, but we...
over the years you haven't had
no,
time?
No.
That's some serious procrastination,
yes.
Man.
Over the years. No, like, even indie record labels over the years have been consumed or subsidized by larger labels who are then owned by other companies. You know what I mean? So,
or like Lookout Records, they collapse because like the selling of Green Day stuff is so big,
yeah,
they can't handle.
Yep.
They don't have the infrastructure to handle what's coming down.
Yep.
And so they go through all kinds of issues.
Yep.
But they, even then, you know, Lookout Records failed because they didn't pay Green Day. Green Day left that stuff on Lookout.
And then but for they a while couldn't they afford pay. To because they didn't know how to handle.
Right. But they then when Green Day pulled all their money out, or all their record labels off, records off the label, Lookout was like, there's nothing there because they were just trying to support the Green Day thing.
No, totally. And you know, it kind of sunk, you know, the fame sunk a lot, record label, and put a lot, you know, a couple of people out of work. But I look at, like, you know, I have some great quotes here. Like, I love Kurt Cobain's, "I don't blame the average 17-year-old punk rock kid for calling me a sellout. I understand that. And maybe when they grow up a little bit, they'll realize there's more things to life than living out your rock and roll identity so righteously."
Yeah.
And I really like that concept, but it goes back to what we were saying. You know, when
I don't listen to sellouts.
when we were kids, that scene was important because we were an active part in it. Once that started to kind of come out of our hands, and once that got pulled out of our hands, it felt like we were losing something that we were an integral part of.
No, when Jawbreaker signed, people would go to their shows, and if they played a song off the new record that was on a major label, the majority of the crowd would turn around.
You know, and that's and that's a little harsh.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I wanted to just go around real quick and say, anybody kind of have like last word on this? Because I do want to play a couple of uses of songs in ads that are 100% my favorite things.
I'll go because I'm the guest, and then you guys can go. Sure.
You are an integral part of this cast of shows, my friend.
You're right. More than just a guest.
So I would say, as far as selling out goes, I would say the point doesn't matter anymore because selling out won, because selling out doesn't exist now. It existed in our time and before, but now with kids growing up, there is no such thing as selling out because everyone is selling everything.
Oh, everything is for sale? Okay. That's our neutral.
Even your integrity, sir?
It's gone. Absolutely. You got $5.
That's our neutral. Okay, so if that's our neutral, what side are you and I on?
Alas, 'tis true. I have gone here and there, and made myself a motley to the view. Gored my own thoughts, sold cheap what is most dear.
Shakespeare, Sonnet 110.
Oh, nice! That's my man right there.
I'm going to holy shit that again, too.
I did send him the link to the article, but I believe he knows that. I know he
not,
knows.
Not up on my computer.
Most impressive, my friend.
Thank you. So I guess I have to kind of take the opposite side and say anyone who sells out is human garbage. So just so we can get the full scope of it, okay? If you are human garbage and would like to write in with a comment, please feel free at cutxcutpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you think about selling out. We're not at the end of the show yet. We still have a few minutes.
Make sure you send a check.
Yeah. If you would like to support us selling out, by all means. If you want to put Chris's face on a product or my own face on a product, feel free. I am for sale cheap.
As long as it doesn't violate the terms and agreements of my current employment.
Or marriage.
Or marriage. And even that, I'm sure it can be negotiable.
You guys are giving me ideas.
For enough money. So this is a Bud Light ad. And here's, this isn't necessarily in the vein of selling out as much as it is just things that make me smile. I love when people buy something. Right, they buy the rights to a song, and it's clear that upper management has not listened to it. Right? Yeah. I mean, I think primarily of like, the most famously, of Reagan using Born in the USA, right? Yeah. Which has this beautiful Born in the USA, you know, bass, chorus. Yet, first kick I took was when I hit the ground, end up like a dog that's been beat too much. You spend half your life just covering up.
Yeah,
that's America, but it's not the America Reagan wanted.
as usual, we just want the chorus part. Just give us the chorus.
And speaking of chorus, this is a Bud Light TV commercial called Gloves that came out in 2016. In it, a man fully dressed in for winter is trying to open a Bud Light can. But his quest for alcohol has him so determined that in this freezing weather, he takes off his glove to imbibe in what could only be described as piss water. We just lost the Bud Light account. However, the music that is taken is from DJ Shadow featuring Run the Jewels' Nobody Speak. This is a little bit from the music video here.
Picture this, I'm a bag of dicks, put me to your lips, I am sick, I will punch a baby bear in his shit, give me lip, I'ma send you to the yard, get a stick, make a switch, I can end the conversation real quick, I am crack, I ain't lying, kick a lion in his crack, I'm the shit, I will fall off in your crib, take a shit, hit your mama on the booty, kick your dog, fuck your
weed. Can we talk about how the opening of this song is, I'm a bag of dicks, put me to your lips, which... in my mind is like someone named Jeff, this was his last day, you know? And they're like, we need a Bud Light ad. He's like, I'm a bag of, oh, I got one for you. Now, DJ Shadow and Run Jewels, great. Glad they made their money. I think it's flipping hilarious that this image, and I can't help but think, doesn't anybody who knows this song immediately think of now putting a bunch of dicks to your mouth when you drink Bud Light?
Yes, absolutely.
And how counterintuitive that must be for an ad.
Oh, I would say that every time you play that DJ Shadow, is that I always think of Joe Strummer and the Mescaleros' Get Down Moses. That riff sounds just like that.
I wonder if it's a sample. I haven't checked. Yeah. I haven't pulled apart the song. I like Shadow, and Shadow, I think, is a Strummer fan, so I wouldn't be shocked. But there was this famous one. And, I mean, we could do this all day, right? We could do the Buzzcocks, the Clash. We could do all kind of Lust for Life, right? We could go back and forth all day with these great songs. But this was one that I really loved. This was the Garner Fructose ad from the early 2000s.
Pigtails too weak to work it? Feel like you're tearing your hair out? Garnier Fructis, the first fortifying shampoo with active fruit concentrate from Garnier. It's proven. The Garnier Fructis system makes hair up to 5 times stronger and so much shinier.
This ad itself is really disturbing.
hair that shines with all its strength.
I'm watching Eric Garnier crumble. Fructis.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what's going on. So anyway, there we go.
We don't need to replay it.
Yeah, we do. But what I loved about, obviously, this particular... this bit is that it's taken from a song which...
Go ahead.
All right, so this is Diamonds and Guns by The Transplants. And I'm going to try to find this moment here where we have the breakdown.
Now the daylight's gone and there's no more fun. And who's that fucking bitch who stole all the hair on? Hair on, hair on, it's all gone. You smoked it all up, now you got none. Now you look around.
Just for
it's a wicked world we live in.
Because when I think hair that can withstand anything, I think of cops who hide behind their fucking guns and their badges, and I think of people who stole all the heroin and who smoked it all up. I mean, I think Garnier really. I think the Transplants laughed all the way to the bank.
Oh yeah, one. Yeah. You know, the iron. Like,
they want what?
It's not. You can't even call that irony, but it's like, wow. Yeah.
There needs to be some other term for it. I'll give you that.
Well, I mean, the only thing about it is because they buy the rights to it, so they don't have to credit them. You know right. what I mean? So they don't have to put down in the corner, like, song by the Transplants, this song off this album, this record company, right?
Although there are a lot of ads now that do that.
Do they do that?
There's a Flaming Lips one where it's like, you know, music by the Flaming Lips.
I wonder if they have to, I wonder if that becomes part of their negotiation.
Probably. Like, when the deal runs out, it's like, all right, now we need...
Like, because if I were the Transplants, I would have... I probably... if. I mean, I don't know who does the deals and whatnot.
Well, to quote Tim Armstrong, when the deals are done... Right, I mean, I think I speak for all of us when I say Rashawn
Gang's wrong. So I would have, I personally, being the troll that I contend to be, I would have said, no, I want in the corner credit for the song, and that would have been because I'm gonna send all the people who are Garnier Fructis shampoo conditioner users to the internet, and they're gonna go, or Pandora, my song, and they're gonna, their jaw is gonna hit the
negative table. Outlook. That's how the fuck I'm living. Yeah, yeah.
So I have to, funny little anecdote about Transplants. My kid heard an Interrupter song recently.
Yeah,
their new album's coming out, and it's actually getting a lot of hype. And he's a fan now, so he's been typing. He's, you know, and they know how to use the computer, and they're typing things in Pandora, and Transplants, as much as I laugh and enjoy, like I love it, I kind of forget about them from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
I go through spurts because it's a little aggressive. It gets to that aggressive hip hop kind of angle for me, and I get uncomfortable, right? And I'm not going to drive around town blasting some of that because anyway,
you live in the wrong town.
Yeah, well, I mean, but I'm in the mode right now where I'm probably going to go pop some of that in tomorrow for tomorrow's drive.
Oh no, they're fantastic. I mean, but one of the members is a guy named Skinhead Rob.
Oh yeah, yeah. So all I was going to say there was I was sitting on the couch the other day reading, and my son comes in and puts on. It was a graphic novel. Don't worry, it was a comic book.
Yeah.
So I'm
I don't really read.
I'm catching up on some 2000 AD that Eric dropped in my lap, and Owen goes over and wants to put some music on, and we're listening to it, and it was some classic stuff, you know. There's some Clash, some Rancid pops up and all that kind of stuff, and then Transplant come on, and I'm like, I know this song, why do I know this song? And then Skinhead Rob starts, you know, doing the way he kind of raps there, and I couldn't get up off the couch fast enough to, like,
Alexa, no.
Alexa, erase my memory of this experience.
Well, because I'm just sitting there with, I'm like, Owen, like, I couldn't get it out fast enough. Like, Owen, you have to skip this song. You're seven. You're not ready for this.
And he was like, negative outlook. That's how the fuck I'm living.
I guess my son some cred, and in a way reflects back on me. He heard an F-bomb or whatever he heard, and he was like, oh, I have to skip this one. And he skipped it, and I was like, he is way better than I am already. Like, I would have been like, whoa, I would have doubled down.
I'll be playing this one later.
Yes. Wrote that song title down.
And so I feel like those are the two songs I had.
Yeah.
Which are my two favorite probably uses of tunes in ads that clearly don't belong in those ads.
We do a different ad. It would bring in the Clash and Rock the Casbah, and how in the early Gulf War they would write Rock the Casbah on the bombs that they were dropping in the Gulf War.
Yeah, but that's out of their control per se, right? I mean, that's not
it's
like
still advertising for the Clash, though. Whether they really like it or not.
I think I might be interested in that.
Oh wow! I have to give them a
yeah, exactly. Oh my God! The people in that plane are Clash fans. Yeah, no. So we are gonna wrap this up.
Yeah, I asked that we close out with a song
about a silent prayer.
A silent prayer for all the.
So join us for all the sellouts of the world in this silent prayer.
No, there's a song by a band called Sellout by a band named Bigwig, the topic of selling out came to mind, and they wrote a song with regards to selling out from their point of view.
Well, I like that one of the comments here is the fact that this only has 21,000 views is heartbreaking. Such an underrated band. A band also sort of talking about selling out,
yep.
Which I think is really a keen sense of irony.
Yeah.
So thank you for joining us. I am Eric.
And I'm Chris.
And I'm other Chris.
And together, we are the Cut Wonder, by...
The Wonder Twins?
Wonder Powers. I was going to go with Cut by Cut Podcast. But if you want to contact us, you can do so at cutxcutpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us like the non-punk rock losers we are at Instagram. You can
You're not punk, and
listen to us
everyone.
In our punk rock way.
Save your breath. I never was one.
At Radio Mutation. It took you that long to bring up the Jawbreaker reference?
He brought it up.
I was waiting for that.
Thank you everyone for listening to this. Radio Mutation, you guys rock.
Yeah.
Thanks for your support.
Keep listening, keep sharing, and remember, I'm not opposed to getting feet pics in the mail, so while we're all selling out, I'm just going to come right out and say that.
cutxcutpodcast@gmail.com. Love you.
Open your mind before you open your mouth. You might be the one selling out.
Oh my God. I'm a fool.